This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Fujitsu back in the UK.
And Oracle dumps Itanium.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for March 25th, 2011. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. Good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael.
Now, we saw a few big announcements this week and a few kind of interesting news items.
How'd we do in the news this week?
Well, we got the announcement by Fujitsu, and that was an interesting announcement because we didn't expect to see Fujitsu doing a big European deployment. And
Fujitsu's back, man.
Yeah, they haven't been in Europe for a while. In the UK, this is their first time in 10 years. They were selected as the contractor to build a big HPC grid for HPC Wales, which is this new group that's building this grid for government and commercial users. And they tapped Fujitsu, and they didn't say who they were competing against, but they got the win, and they're going to build this thing. It's going to be ready by, I think, before the end of 2011. I think they're building it as we speak.
Right, right. This kind of comes up out of nowhere. We haven't, Fujitsu's been involved in some of the Japanese supercomputing efforts, which are, you know, keep bubbling back to the surface, but we haven't seen them outside of Japan in a while, and suddenly it seems like we're seeing a lot of activity out of Fujitsu in the UK. It wasn't just the deal announcement, but there was a separate release saying that Fujitsu UK would be targeting HPC as a market. And, you know, behind the scenes, we're hearing from them as well, talking about, what they need to do in order to address the UK HPC market.
Right. They were making noises last year like they were going to start exporting some of this HPC technology, but I think at that point they were talking about their K computer technology, which is their new fancy Spark-based system just going into the 10 petaflop next-generation computer over at, in Japan. But this is actually a Xeon-based system, their sort of mainline system. But yeah, they seem to be interested in this, and they targeted the UK. I'm not sure if they're looking at other areas in Europe, but they have a big footprint all of a sudden. They're going to have a 190 teraflop grid spread over like 12 sites, and they're going to in charge of the whole thing.
Well, and you know what was most interesting to me is that in as much as this was a UK supercomputing kind of deal, there are actually a lot of parallels between that and the US focus on the whole missing middle in manufacturing that we've been talking about. There's a lot of outreach and partnership to small and medium-sized businesses planned with this, right?
Right. That's what it seems to be modeled for to get these government academics institutions hooking up with commercial businesses, small, medium, or large, to help them adopt HPC, in this case, regionally in Wales and maybe the greater UK. But yeah, it's one of those things where they're trying to encourage commercial adoption of this technology. And yeah, like we've seen these things in various models, started in the US certainly and around the world. And this is sort of the Welsh version of this. So.
Right. And this is big news for Cardiff as well. I mean, they were part of the whole UK grid initiative that went back to several years ago, and now we're seeing Cardiff come back with another strong system.
Right, right. They're one of the people involved in this. I think there's 8 major academic sites as well. There's Swansea and some of the other universities. Right. And I think there's 12 sites altogether. I think they're all academic or research-based. And then there'll be some smaller sites. And we're not quite sure how that system's going to be spread. But, yeah, this is big news for those institutions because they're relatively small universities by world standards. And yet, all of a sudden, they're going to have this access to pretty serious floppery all of a sudden.
Well, let's talk about the fact that this is a distributed grid. I mean, what do you think of that model, housing this across all these different sites?
Well, I mean, it's a very European thing. The Europeans love the grid idea. They've never sort of given up on this thing. You look at Dice and all the other groups, they like this model of sharing resources like this and sort of spreading right. the wealth. Whereas, you look in the U.S. and it's like everybody sort of likes to build their own little empire, as big a supercomputer as they can.
I think that's actually kind of a biased view. You've got Michael saying they've never given up on it. I mean, Europe has always had a different, more mature view of grid than the U.S. had. And as much as the U.S. had TerraGrid and other right. things, the Europeans really were building science grids across multiple academic sites. They've been doing it for over a decade now. So this, I think, is just a continuation of that and what a grid looks like in Europe, in the U.K.,
right, and they're using that model to now hook into the commercial world. So they want to use the same model and not just use it for academics, but use this as something they can sell sort of as a private cloud. They've got the middleware from Fujitsu they're going to use for that. And, yeah, so it's going to be basically built like a grid or, in this case, sort of a private cloud and let commercial businesses tap in. And hopefully, I think they're hoping to sell time on this system to keep this going. It's a five-year project, and they've got – I think £40 million allocated to this over the next 5 years, but surely they're looking to extend this out. I think one way to do that is to attract right. enough commercial businesses to start paying into this and having an ongoing concern.
Well, we've seen this model before, and this in the U.S. I mean, we talked on this podcast going back a while ago about that system in New Mexico that was targeting local small and medium-sized businesses to help offset or defray a lot of the costs of the supercomputing program. I don't have a lot of public information about it, but I don't think that's been a success thus far. What do you think of this model for this grid?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think whether it's a grid or not is going to make or break this thing. I think, like you mentioned, the New Mexico system was trying to do sort of the same thing, in this case with one system. I think the secret sauce is the people involved. If they're able to attract businesses, that there's got to be some outreach and some hand-holding, and I think it's going to depend upon the individual universities and maybe Fujitsu in this case, because they're involved in this too, and if they're able to sort of make that bridge to these commercial entities. So,
right. Because one thing we know is you can't just say, hey, everybody, supercomputing cycles for sale, and then have non-supercomputing users show up to say, oh, God, that's just what I've been waiting for, right? I mean, unless you've already got some kind of application expertise or modeling that you're already trying to do and waiting for that capability, just the availability of it doesn't create the opportunity. But here we're talking about Fujitsu putting a lot of people on site, depending on what the skill set of those people are, maybe they've got that kind of modeling and simulation expertise to help people adopt supercomputing for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, the report was that they were going to have actual, not just people to build the system, but people who knew about how to sort of help with application porting and all the other stuff that has to do with the software stack. But and they also mentioned they already have like over 100 projects sort of on the docket that they think have some commercial relevance, or in some cases they already have business partners there. So some of these universities have the business relationships, and these research projects in HPC have that hook there. So if those relationships can pan out and they can entice these businesses to start using this, I think that'll be the trick. Like you said, in New Mexico, it didn't seem to work. I haven't heard any particular success stories come out of that, and I think we would have if we'd had some. They would have been trumpeting those. So it's not, like you said, just hanging out the sign and saying HPC for sale. It's building those relationships sort of one at a time.
Right, and so maybe this will work. It's kind of a lot of different storylines all wrapped up into one. We've got the Fujitsu comeback into Europe. It's a different architecture for Fujitsu. It's a grid that's in the UK, and they've got the outreach to all the local businesses. It's kind of interesting in four different dimensions to see how it's going to play out.
Yeah, and the other interesting part was that they were pretty upfront about what they expected to happen, but it was pretty, their goals were pretty modest. Like they said, over the next 10 years, they only expect to attract, well, as many as 10 businesses, maybe more, and maybe create 400 jobs. Well, that's not a whole lot because they're investing £40 million in this, which is what, like $60 million or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money to pull in 10 businesses. But I think they're expecting to get some revenue out of that, and the businesses certainly would hopefully profit from that as well, and maybe that'll generate downstream money. But it doesn't seem like their goals were really lofty, or maybe just they're being rational about it, but they're putting a lot of money into this to sort of jumpstart this to make this regional HPC base, but not expecting a whole lot at this point.
Well, we'll certainly want to follow that up and see how it tracks forward. Going forward to next stories in the news, we had a couple of quick hits that, you know, that do touch on HPC. Maybe an interesting one that's fun to follow in the papers is Larry Ellison's going off again, Michael. This time he's talking about Itanium.
Yeah, I got to believe Ellison was behind this. But, yeah, basically Oracle announced they were dropping software support for Itanium, the Itanium CPU, and basically in their database systems and the rest of their software. And this is basically the end of a long bunch of servers and software makers saying that they're ditching the technology. It's been sort of this slow dissolve of people abandoning it. We had Red Hat and Microsoft saying they're not going to move up to, or they're not going to keep supporting Itanium on the next OS. And now we've got Oracle, but Oracle did it in a particularly interesting way, basically taking a few shots at HP, basically saying HP doesn't seem to be very committed to this either, and then taking a shot at Intel saying the Itanium is basically at the end of life because the x86 is going to take over that line, and right. Intel's planning on that. And so there's a flurry of PR activity by HP and Intel to sort of do damage control, and there's sort of this cross statements going back and forth, and then Oracle had to put out another statement basically explaining its position later in the week. So,
You know, no matter how much Oracle does or doesn't sell into HPC, we always manage to keep getting entertained by them. I thought we were going to stop covering Oracle for the most part, and here they are.
Yeah, it's amazing how much they touch on this. And like you said, I mean, Itanium, it's not a big HPC system, CPU anymore. But there's still a few systems out there using it, and this isn't going to affect that one way or another. I mean, Oracle is basically pulled out of HPC for the time being. It's not like that was going to affect it. I mean, the big software stacks that are going to be leaving Itanium were under Red Hat and Microsoft, and those would have been the things that would be most concerned to people in HPC. But
Well, you know, I'll throw in a stat of the week here, Michael, which we often save for the end of the show, but it's topical now. We've just completed our newest site census survey, which asks people to tell us everything they've got installed and when they installed it. Our most recent iteration of that survey is primarily covering newer systems, of course, but we can catch older installed base systems as well. We usually get over 100, a couple hundred systems into a survey. How many Itanium systems do you think we found in our most recent survey?
Out of how many?
I don't have the exact system count in front of me because we're still cleaning it up, but let's say it's on the order of 150.
Phew. I'd say one.
We found three, actually, okay. And we've got a total of 37 going back in time, but they kind of peaked in the mid-2000s with a lot of SGI systems.
Right.
The most recent one is a 2010 system installed by HP. So really? They're in there a little bit. A few people have them, 1, 2% of the market, not a whole lot of Itanium in HPC. They're still in there.
Right. I mean, basically, since SGI is, at least for the time being, has abandoned it, and I don't expect them to really come back into it. And then, of course, Bull pulled out. HP is really the only server vendor that's making these things, and they're not really targeting it for HPC anymore. So I'm actually a little surprised to see an HP system in there, but people buy the darndest things for HPC sometimes.
Well, I mean, we did get three SGI Itanium systems in that were installed in 2009. So, I mean, okay. That's not that awful long ago. SGI still has them, I guess, or
can build them.
They might have been upgraded last in 2009 at the very least. It could be an older system that was upgraded in 2009.
Right, they've never announced systems moving on to the next, the current generation of Itanium, and I don't really expect them to, but stranger things have happened, I guess.
Sure. One other quick story I did want to hit, because I think it will be of interest to some of the actual system administrators who have to worry about such things, is that Spectra upgraded its tape libraries with some new functionality.
Right. We caught that too, and I talked to some of the folks there at Spectra. Yeah, Spectra is definitely devoted to the high end of the tape market, and they get a lot of their input from HPC, their HPC customers. In this case, these customers wanted basically their tape to act even more like this. They wanted higher integrity tape, so they wouldn't have to go mounting tapes that they hadn't used in a while and figure out that the data is no longer good because the media had degraded. So they've added this capability to basically automate integrity checks on the tapes at various levels so that the administrators automatically get notified if the tapes are bad or they're degrading at certain points.
Yeah, and I mean, this comes around to tape kind of getting a bad rap a lot of the time where people see, oh, tape, is that still around? First of all, yes, it's still around. A lot of people have it. And in terms of it being, a dead technology, I think it's dead except for the fact that it's got better bytes per dollar, bytes per watt, and bytes per floor tile than disk does, right?
Right.
So, I mean, a lot of people still have tape, and Spectra is addressing a lot of what people worry about with tape. You get the file system access with Active Archive so you don't lose stuff there. You make them more reliable so when it comes back, you've got it. I think these are positive innovations for data management in HPC and very worthwhile to discuss or look at.
Yeah, and what's amazing to me as I was talking with the Spectra folks is a lot of HPC sites, especially the big labs, use a lot of this tape. And some of them,
they do. Quite a lot.
NERSC uses this for primary storage almost exclusively or exclusively. In other words, they actually load a lot of the applications, just load the database directly from tape, crunch it in memory, and then just write it back to tape. There's not even a disk save there going on.
It's good density and it's good cost, so yeah. It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, if you're just going to do it all in one shot, if you don't have to keep writing files in and out to a disk and get that fast access, why not have it on
tape?
The disk
has the faster access, the better bandwidth, and it is going to be used more often for the near-line storage. But
right.
I think tape still has a role, and I think that's a good launch from Spectra.
Yeah, so it is sort of amazing. We don't think about it, but I think tape, it sounds like it's playing a bigger role as people really can't keep their data up with the disk systems. It's just growing too fast. So they are looking to use more and more tape as a proportion of their storage. And Spectra's right there. They know this market, and they're well hooked into the HPC folks, so they know what they need.
Well, Michael, I'm excited. I'm going to see you in person next week. We got the Newport conference coming up, HPCC in Newport, Rhode Island.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I think it's my first time there on site, and I hope to make it there if all things, plane flights work okay. And, yeah, I hope to have an enjoyable 2.5 days. It looks like a nice lineup, and, yeah, hope to see you there.
Yeah, I like that. Well, I'll definitely be there. I'm on the agenda a couple of times. I've got an exciting Crossfire panel lined up for Thursday morning, maybe we'll have something special to talk about next week. We'll see.
I'm sure we will.
All right. Thanks, Michael. I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.